Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 82, Text 39. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Suka Uvacha. Gopyashcha Krishnam Upalabhya Chirada Dishtam. Yat prekshane jishishu pakshma kritam sapanti trikbirhidiritam malam paridatya sarvas tat bhavam apur apinitya yujam durapam. Sukadeva Goswami said, while gazing at their beloved Krishna, the young gopis used to condemn the creator of their eyelid, which would momentarily block their vision of him. Now, seeing Krishna again after such a long separation, with their eyes, they took him into their hearts, and there they embraced him to fulfill their full satisfaction. In this way, they became totally absorbed in ecstatic meditation on him. Although those who constantly practice mystic yoga find such absorption difficult to achieve. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksu Imulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Nayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati sapadantikam vanshakalpa karubhyashta kripashindubhayevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from on the road. I'm headed to the Bhakti Center, which I'll stay till Wednesday when I leave. Going to Moscow and then India. And Tuesday night, I'll give my final Sangha in the U.S. for this year. But I'm also going in because Garuda, a professor, is giving class there in the morning. He's also writing the biography of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he wants to get my input, insights, remembrances, etc. Last week I spoke on the wives of the Brahmins because there were people in our teacher training who wasn't able to complete the story. If any of those people are still on and would like to hear the story, just send me an email, tds@wavesofdevotion.com, and I'll arrange another class. Because even from India, I can give classes, but we're on a very interesting story here in the 10th canto. It's high. High meaning it's very, very intimate story. Residents of Vrindavan are going to see Krishna after, 86 years or something. He's still eternally youthful, as they are. And it's a solar eclipse. which from a material standpoint is very inauspicious. From a spiritual standpoint, everything that happens is meant to bring us closer to God. Prabhupada said even a devotee, astrologically, yes, if you have a material destiny, material destiny is your karma, but when you get spiritual knowledge and make a spiritual commitment, it certainly changes. But the main way it changes is the influence that it has on you. Because you react in a different way, and therefore what's technically inauspicious materially, which means it moves against your desires, it may be spiritually auspicious because it may move towards your inner strength. And if you look at your life, what's really auspicious is that which is, gives you inner strength. And what's really inauspicious, even though materially it may line up with your desires and things, is those things that deny your inner strength. So it's a solar eclipse, but for spiritual people, even though materially it's considered very, very impure, very, very contaminating, spiritually, those types of circumstances that are thrust upon you are an opportunity to go deeper and take shelter of God. So even when Krishna's living, and 5,000 years ago, that was the culture. And therefore, when there was a solar eclipse, they go to a holy place. And one of the most powerful holy places is Kurukshetra. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, because the first verse in the Bhagavad Gita is Dharma Kshetra Kurukshetra. Before the battle starts, Dharma Kshetra. They understand that this is Dharma Kshetra. This is a field that can bring you closer to yourself. The environment has effects. I'm going to New York City. There's an energy that brings you away from the self. There's an energy that brings you to the false self. There's an energy that's promoting as a value system that says that success is when you're in the center and due to your fame, due to your wealth, due to your beauty, that people move around you for your desire. So that type of culture, that type of influence, that type of attitude, and the objects and environment that that attitude creates brings you away from the self, unless you have a specific spiritual objective to be there, or it happens to be your karma. Otherwise, spiritual people don't choose to live there. Only if that's where I make my living, or that's where my field of teaching is. In the same way, there's spiritual environments called holy places where the inner core desire is to put God in the center. And therefore, the environment is instructed to remind you of that and inspire you for that. That's why so many people like to go to these holy places. Either they feel it immediately. Externally, because people create an environment according to their consciousness, so an environment like that, Vrindavan, there are 5,000 temples, there's sadhus, there's kirtans, everything's... And internally, there's something very, very deep and very, very special, which you feel immediately. Even Prabhupada said, even if you don't know it. My personal example is when my mother visited Vrindavan. And she had no spiritual vision, but she woke up in the middle of the night chanting Hare Krishna, even though it's not something that she wanted to do. By the way, I had my birthday yesterday, and it was so nice to see my mother, 92. We got her a chair to sit on the side, standing in the kirtan. And Lakshmi Nisringa is leading a wonderful kirtan. Anyway, the residents of Vrindavan go to this place, Kurukshetra, which is north of them. And the residents of Dwarka, they go east to go there because it has this place called Brahma Sarovara, which is a incredibly beautiful, even to this day, spiritual lake that's considered extremely purifying. So they're all going to this place for the solar eclipse. And that meeting between the residents of Vrindavan and Krishna, after so many years of deep, deep separation, is one of the most moving and intense demonstrations of devotional service. Srila Guru Govinda Maharaj, one of my godbrothers, when he described this prema bhakti, perfectional consciousness is a heart filled with love. Even, one second, I'll be right back. Whoops, that was Gopishore or something. I had to answer the phone. Okay, so, and I explain this, and it's such a beautiful point, the conception of love as an energy. Energy flows, and it's a fact. In the Vaishnav conception of reality, love is not just a mental conception. Love is a potency of God. It's called Bhaktinad. It's God's own pleasure potency. His pleasure potency is called Lakini Shakti. The essence of that pleasure potency is Krishna Prema. So it's an energy. And it's an energy that flows to your heart that combines with your attitude to serve God. Because when you want to serve God, that means you want to give God pleasure. And what gives God pleasure? It's his internal potency. So it's described that a particular level of devotional service, when that intensity and desire to please God has become so blissful and so intense that the only way it can be compared to is you are addicted to serving God. And when you're addicted to serving God, you move towards serving God spontaneously. You don't have to bring your mind back to serving God. Just like an addict does not have to bring his mind back to taking some drug. An alcoholic does not have to bring his mind back to taking a drink. And someone who's addicted with bhakti, he doesn't have to bring his mind back to serving Krishna. So it becomes a consuming voice within the heart, cultivated by the practice of devotional service. So that is what your mind is. Your mind are these intense attachments that I want to please God. And this intense aversion to anything that has no value, that is anartha to serving God. And when that consumes your consciousness, it attracts God's attention in a way that he gives you an energy. And this is called the stage of bhava. An energy descends on your consciousness of intense love for God in a particular way and inspires your own individual desire to become God. And then your consciousness becomes spiritualized to the maximum degree. It's called tadatmika. Tadatmika means it becomes one. Just like an iron ball in fire becomes fire, it becomes heat and light. Our consciousness becomes that. It becomes that love. And therefore there's an energy that flows from God to our consciousness, and then it flows back to God to give God pleasure, and that's called prema bhakti. And that prema bhakti flowing intensely, it has two, like a river has two embankments. It has the embankment of union. A river has two embankments, so love has two embankments. The embankment of union, the embankment of separation. So these particular stories, they actually express this high love of prema, and it gives you some glimpses into the separation and union of that particular feeling. And therefore, so cultivating Krishna consciousness in an appropriate way, they read these stories and become inspired. Of course, this is the 10th canto, and it requires a certain amount of understanding and a certain amount of detachment. And when your mind is reasonably prepared, and the way Prabhupada writes his purports is specifically to do so, then when you hear these stories, you become very inspired. You become very inspired in devotion. So here, the gopis meet Krishna. And Sukadeva Goswami is explaining what is the extent of their love. Is they love Krishna so much that they can't tolerate a moment's separation. To the extent that they condemn the Creator for making islands. So it tries to give you some vision of what the perfectional state of life is. If there is God, and there is a perfection of love, it must be the most intense love. It must be love to the extent. And no one in this world can say they have it for anyone else. It must be love to the extent that you condemn your eyelid. Because you can't tolerate a blink that doesn't see Krishna. When the cowherd boys go through the forest and they see Krishna in the distance, this is described in Priyatvah Bhagavatamrita. So sometimes a cowherd boy wanders off to get some flowers or see some fruit somewhere, and then Krishna's in the distance a little bit, and it's a forest. So he has all his cows before him, and they're beautiful different colors, with their milk bags hanging to the ground, naturally wetting the forest with their milk. And Krishna's behind the cows, because he loves Vrindavan so much, that even though he has to herd the cows, he fears that their stampede will hurt the ground of Vrindavan, so he's walking behind the cows, covering their footprints with his soft feet, and he's blowing his flute. So when they go through the forest, Krishna will pass a tree where momentarily he can't be seen. And it's described that moment, the cowherd boys cry out, Krishna, in separation. Similarly, the gopis, they're explaining their love. Krishna is their life, and without Krishna, they have no life. The Bhagavatam is described as tapta dukkha. Dukkha means unhappiness, and tapta means suffering. Prabhupada describes it as torment. Tapta dukkha shunya. They're tormented. Their life becomes shunya. It becomes zero. So the leelas or the pastimes is Krishna's story. It's an environment and a play that brings out deeply these feelings of separation and these feelings of union. It's described when Krishna goes to the forest in the morning, the forest blooms, and that when he leaves the forest in the evening to come back home with the cows, the forest withers. So there's this union and separation, and it continually keeps this love. Because Krishna is called Rasika. Rasika means he's a connoisseur of this love. So it keeps it to the height, the intensity of relish. And therefore, the great souls, they aspire for this type of love. And it's specifically why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna, who's coming to experience the love of his topmost devotees, used to hear this story. This is one of the stories you would hear. Because he somehow wanted to feel that. Because that type of love is somehow or other, love is the greatest pleasure. So even in separation, the tormenting, ironically, heightens the love and gives such a sweet taste. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would like to hear the stories of when Akura took Krishna from Vrindavan. I know if my friend is Henry is listening. In his house, he has an original painting by B.G. Sharma. It's right outside his office. And I think it's been moved, but by B.G. Sharma, of the sentiments of the residents of Vrindavan, specifically the gopis, when Akrura comes to take Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura, and the picture of Radharani climbing the chariot, trying to grab the reins to stop it, another gopi fainting in front of the chariot, and then it's described that finally the wheels begin to churn. And then Krishna goes. So again, Srila Gaura Govinda Marts, because I'm quoting actually from this book, The Embankment of Separation. What he describes is there's three stages of separation. You're with someone and you know they're going. You're feeling so much separation. And so they were with Krishna. They're holding the reins, but they're feeling separation. And then when the wheels move and they see that Krishna's leaving, and then when he's gone, there's three Sanskrit terms, but the love, when he's actually moving, when they actually see him go off, that's the most intense. And that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to experience. What was his top devotee feeling at that time? And this is what we want to experience. We want to experience love. Our objective has to be love. It has to be pure love. It has to be love of Godhead. What is it like to have that feeling in your heart? We all like love, but what is it like to have that topmost love? And those that are intelligent, tasyeva eto priyateta kovido, they don't wander from it. They're kovido. They're very intelligent. This is what they want. So now when they see Krishna, they take him into his heart and they embrace him in the heart to their full satisfaction. and they become totally absorbed in ecstatic meditation, although those who constantly practice yoga find such absorption difficult to obtain. The mystic yogis find that type of absorption difficult to obtain because they have to do it by their willpower. And the gopis' meditation on God, which is the preferred object of meditation, is done out of attachment. And the focus of attachment is so much more powerful than the focus of understanding. And this is the essence of Krishna consciousness. This is why in the Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, it says, Yoginam api sarvesham bhajyatena taratmanam shradhava bhajyateyo mamsaram. Of all yogis, one who worships me with faith and devotion is the highest of all. Why? Because they have an emotional attachment to the object of meditation. And that's the advantage of bhakti. And therefore, the story and the example of the gopis is the example of the greatest lovers, but it's also the example of the greatest yogis, because their meditation is the highest. And it's not mundane, because it's to God. And they know it's to God. I've studied this point. They know it's to God. But that knowledge that it's to God, which makes it appropriate, otherwise it's just mundane, the knowledge to God is completely covered. They understand it's God, but it doesn't cover their relationship. As a mother whose child becomes famous, the child's fame increases the love, but it doesn't affect the love. That the fame will make the mother worship the child in respect and reverence and distance and fear. It won't affect it like that. And according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, just then Lord Balaram saw the gopis standing a short distance away. Seeing them trembling with eagerness to meet Krishna and apparently ready to give up their lives if they could not, he tactfully decided to get up and involve himself elsewhere. So Balaram is the brother of Krishna. And when the brother is around, these type of feelings that Krishna has are checked. So Balaram leaves, just as Nityananda leaves Puri, because that's where Krishna in the form of Chaitanya came to experience and wanting to relish this mood of Radha. And therefore, Nityananda, who's the brother of Chaitanya, he doesn't stay, actually. He goes to share, but internally, he doesn't stay. Because it would not be service. Just like if there's a young boy and girl, even of an arranged marriage, and the parents, out of service, the older brother out of service, they will leave them to themselves so they can experience the intimacy and see how they feel. And everything is based on service. Father has three desires. You want to be with your beloved, you want to have a relationship with your beloved, and you want to serve your beloved. But of all those feelings, what takes precedence is service. Service inspires the desire to be with one. Service inspires the desire to have the relationship. But ultimately, the desire to serve takes precedence. Just like the wives of the prophets, when they ran out in the middle of the forest, they left everything, their families, everything, to go see Krishna. And then Krishna tells them it's not an appropriate relationship. Then they say, okay, then we will stay in the forest. And if we get a fraction of the leaf from the Tulsi garland, or the dust that touches your feet will be satisfied. Because when there is a cognizance and an understanding of God, the first understanding is that God is so great that I cannot earn God. If I can earn God, then it must not be God. Because he can't be that cheap that I can pay for God by some practices, by some rounds. But if by that practice of devotion, God sees our humility and our utter dependence on him, then that practice being a vehicle to express our need can attract God. And as soon as that practice becomes mechanical, and as soon as the practice becomes a formula, to the extent that it becomes a formula, that it becomes a that then to that extent, it's limited in attracting the mercy of God. It's the practice, but and if you don't love for God, this without its intent, without its heart, then it also the love is limited. And therefore, the people that really love God, they chant all the time. But what is their chanting? It's, oh, Krishna, vocative. Oh, Radha, please engage me in your service. It's an entreaty. It's something that one is begging from the heart for. And that attracts Krishna's attention or Krishna's mercy. Then the gopis attain the state described in the current verse, when Balaram left. They could express their hearts fully. In reference to the gopis' intolerant disrespect of Lord Brahma, the creator of eyelids, Sukadeva Goswami is venting his own subtle jealousy of the gopis' favored position. Sri Jiva Goswami offers an alternate understanding of the phrase Nitya Yujam, which may even mean of the Lord's principal queens who tend to be proud of their association. So this type of love is not achieved by the yogis, and it's not achieved by the queens of Dwarka either, because their love is mixed with a sense of obligation and duty to Krishna, who has appeared as their husband. And to the extent that their sense of obligation and duty, it's pure, but it's not as powerful as spontaneous love, where your movements and actions to the pleasure of Krishna have no obligation and duty. It's just the force of your love. And that's actually what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to experience and came to give. So I'm going to have to end a little bit early today, but I feel proud of myself in the sense that I'm steady in these classes and even in different circumstances. But if anyone would like to ask a question, they're welcome.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Bo, Nanda Dulo. I got your letter.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I want to tell you. I got your letter.
No, thank you, Maharaj. And I just want to know, yesterday's lecture I could not hear, Maharaj, because the communication, the connection was not good, you know, yesterday when you spoke. Is it, you know, in the transcript?
Rati Krishna will know if it was taken.
Okay, I'll send him an email.
Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Thank you for saying
hello.
Who's that?
Hi, Bo, it's Sharanjali and Kalatanji.
Hare Bo. Great to hear
you.
Thank you so much. Good. Yeah, I'm going into the Bhakti Center. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah. Hi, Bogio. Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, Chaitanya Priya. Okay. Okay, anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Hanan. Thank you for the nice class.
Always nice to have you on. Thank you so much. Good. Anybody else? Say hello.
Thank you for the nice class, Maharaj.
Arbo, Henry, meditating on that picture by B.G. Sharma. Wow. I'm giving a class, right? I'm giving the story of that picture. So after I give the story, you can just meditate on that picture, which the picture is worth 1,000 words. Anyway, get well, Henry. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, thank you, Bunchy Bumpy.